nanohub.org.
You can follow along with this presentation using printed slides from the NanoHub. Visit www.nanohub.org and download the PDF file containing the slides for this presentation. Print them out and turn each page when you hear the following sound. Enjoy the show.
So this lecture sequence is called Asymmetric RTDs. And the point is that we want to explore charge accumulation in a little bit more detail. So now the emitter barrier is a little bit thinner than the collector barrier. I made it thicker. So I chose it to be 7 nanometers on the collector side. And if you sort of have a sequential tunneling picture in mind, you might have seen expressions like this where the current is proportional to gamma left times gamma right over gamma left plus gamma right, where gamma are sort of hopping matrix elements or tunneling rates in a sequential way of hopping from the left into the center and then from the center to the right. Okay? And if the barrier to the right is thicker than the barrier on the left, the gamma is much smaller, right? Because it's an exponential effect, as we saw in the analytical expressions in the previous lecture. So, but let's assume that you have a high bias condition. Okay? Let's assume that your bias is high enough and your sea of electrons is way down below on the collector that there's nothing to hop back. Right? So everything comes from the emitter. Okay? So that means everybody has to go shopping first here in the center and then they can go through, right? So that means if you knew what the occupation here is in the emitter, in the central device, and you know what the hopping rate is that comes out, you would have the current. Right? So the current is proportional to the hopping through the right and the charge that is in the middle. Right? Meaning, it's really dominated by the collector barrier here. Alright. That means if you plug these two things together, the charge is determined by the hopping on the left in, divided by the hopping in and the hopping out. Does that make sense? So now if you say, well, my hopping in is much faster than my hopping out, that means gamma left is much higher than gamma right, that means n is roughly 1. Right? Your gamma right is negligible, so you have gamma L over gamma L, that's 1. That means your resonance is full. Intuitively, that was clear, right? I mean, in a sense, if very few electrons can hop through here, that means they're all filled from the left. That means that resonance is basically in equilibrium with the left. Okay? So it's coupled very strongly to the left. That means you have a pile of electrons that are going to sit in the central RTD. And indeed, on resonance, the charge in the center of the RTD can be larger than the charge in the emitter. Okay? That is sort of peak charge in volume charge. We haven't really talked about sheet charge. We haven't integrated that in space, right? That peak looks bigger, but it's not clear that the content of that peak is more than the content of that curve. All right, so what are the consequences on our traces of eigenenergies? So here again is my central resonance. It's being pulled down almost linearly until it's starting to fill up with states. And now it's like the bobber of on your fishing pole, right? It really doesn't want to go under the sea of electrons, right? Because it's being filled up with charge, and as it's filled up with charge, the electrostatic potential pushes it up, right? So the electrostatic potential rises up in the emitter, and it's no longer linear, right? Clearly, this is not linear. And the central resonance also resists being pulled down. It floats sort of in this Fermi sea, right? So a linear potential drop would be this dashed line that's flashing here. But it's actually resisting they're being pulled down. Again, until it empties out. So you need a large bias to overcome this electrostatic pushback, so to speak, and it's moved out to a higher voltage, or relatively high voltage. And indeed, if you now compare a IV calculated in semi-classical potential with a Thomas Fermi potential and this quantum charge potential, they look quite different. Because now the semi-classical potential or the semi-classical charge is really underestimating the charge that is sitting in the emitter and in the central device. So here you have this effect of linearizing your IV quite dramatically and the current rises, just like in the symmetric RTD, but it's even more exacerbated. And then this potential drop appears to be much sharper because now the resonance really drops out linearly and drops down. But also still the valley current appears to be quite high in this RTD, and the second peak in the RTD appears to turn on rather rapidly compared to semi-classical, right? So here's this turn on is earlier in voltage than the semi-classical. We got to understand why that is. And the turn on of this IV also appears more rapidly. It turns on faster, so that the baseline is higher, and then also the turn on is faster. So why is that? They seem to differ quite dramatically. So let's look at that a little bit. So here we look at peak voltage right here at this peak, and the central resonance is aligned with the emitter resonance, and there's a pile of charge in here. So here I'm showing this resonance state right now. It's not perfectly aligned. And I drew sort of in PowerPoint a straight line in the light blue. Okay? And you can see that just by looking at it, in the center, there's a little bit of a curve to the potential. Okay? That's the charge that's sitting there being imaged onto the electrostatic potential that floats up to push it out. And it doesn't push up as high in the regions where there's no charge, like in the center of the barriers. And in the center of the well, there's a lot of charge. It likes to push it really out. Okay? So you can see the evidence of the charge accumulation sort of in the shape of this potential. Now, if you go into a bias here at this valley, you still have a lot of charge sitting in here versus in the case of Thomas Fermi, there wouldn't be a whole lot of charge. And if you go higher in voltage further, the charge seems to have vanished, but the current seems to be higher. So we don't quite understand it yet, right? There's an empty resonance, but the Hartree still has a different potential. And what is happening here is that this, I overlaid now here on the top right, the colored graphs, the blue and the red are the Hartree calculation, and the gray are the Thomas Fermi. So it looks like in the Thomas Fermi potential, the potential seems to be higher than the Hartree potential, especially in the excited state here. There's a lot of difference in these two states. So the Thomas Fermi potential seems to be higher in potential than the Hartree potential. And the consequence is that there is more current effectively flowing in the Hartree potential because the resonances are lower. And if you pull them deeper into the sea of electrons, there's more supply functions in the Fermi function, so there's more current flowing. And what you see here is that overall, for high biases, I'm comparing here the traces now that's harder to see of the Thomas Fermi calculation compared to the Hartree calculation. The Thomas Fermi you can make out as red lines here really nicely because they don't have these kinks in potential, right? They just go down smoothly, what we had seen before. They don't know about charge accumulation in the well. So early on you have charge accumulation in the well and the central resonance is above the sea of electron, the resonances of the Thomas Fermi, and then they drop down deeper And also the electrostatic potential drops down deeper. So the emitter charge buildup in Hartree is smaller at high biases compared to the Thomas Fermi case. That results in lower potentials and into higher currents. So this was the chart I showed earlier where I argued this resonance is full and at resonance condition of C1 coupling to E2 in the emitter. So the resonance is full. So that begs the question, what happens in the other bias direction? Right? What happens if you flip the device around or you apply the voltage from the other end? For graphical purposes, it's nicer to just flip the device around so I can compare on the same voltage scale and energy scales. So I'm going to do that. I'm just going to flip the device around and make this barrier on the left thicker than the barrier on the right. And now I can compare up and down like this. And I'm changing the condition effectively. Gamma left is no longer much larger than gamma right. It's in fact flipped. Okay, so if it's flipped, let's walk through that. If gamma left is much smaller than gamma right, and we substitute that in this equation for n, that means basically n is zero. Right? There's no charge in the emitter, in the collector. Neither emitter nor collector, no charge in the central well. That means just intuitively, well, you hop in at a certain rate, but as soon as you hopped in, you hopped out. Okay? And then you wait around for a while, statistically speaking, and an electron hops in, and it hops out immediately. There's no charge accumulation. In fact, there's charge depletion then. It's not quite charge depletion because the charge is still larger than the doping background. But it has dropped dramatically. If the charge profile changed dramatically, the potential will change. We had argued before that if there's a lot of charge in here, it changes the lever arm of this RTD. So if the lever arm changes, your IV will change. Okay? So this case will not have any back action at all in terms of the central resonance being filled with charge. It will be virtually empty. That means our resonance, instead of being sort of floating up like a bobber on water, it should just pull down linearly. And indeed it does, right? This resonance doesn't float up in potential because it's virtually empty. An empty charge, zero charge, in a Poisson equation means linear potential drops. Okay? That means the resonance basically goes down linearly. And indeed it does. That means the crossover from the central resonance with E2 and E1 happens at a much earlier voltage than in the case of the reverse bias. The lever arms have changed. Okay? So there's no evidence of this charge pushback. And in fact, you can argue that in this case, the Thomas Fermi and Hartree solution should be roughly the same. Because we know that the Thomas Fermi solution was underestimating charge in the well. Well, if there's no charge, there's not much to underestimate. So they should roughly be the same. So let's look at that. And indeed, the current voltage characteristic looks like this. Hartree and Thomas Fermi calculations roughly give you the same result. It happens early on in the curve when these peaks are aligned. And if you compare that to the previous case where we have the forward bias, you see that the peak is really indeed at an earlier voltage. And it happens also now that the peak current is much smaller. Okay? So the conduction band edges in forward and reverse bias look very different. So here I superimposed forward and reverse bias. And the colorful ones are the ones where the barrier is fat on the right. the fat in the collector. So the potential floats up. And in gray, I'm showing the fat barrier on the left, and basically the well empty, you see it, a linear potential drop here versus a little bit of bending in the other case. And basically the lever arm of the structure has changed. So you added a little bit of lever arm in a sense, as the collector pulls down, you gave it a longer lever because there's no charge inside the RTD. That means it pulls it down easier. So the resonances move faster, so to speak. Okay? So finally, I want to look at charge occupation a little bit in the central device. We had argued that, so what I can do is, on the top curve here, I'm actually showing the current voltage characteristic in forward and reverse bias on a log scale. So that's why they look a little bit different, right? But basically you see a log type turn on and then a turn off here, and a log time turn on in the reverse bias direction. I can compute in this RTD negative tool the charge density inside the RTD. So in the forward bias direction, I'm actually having a lot of charge. It's roughly 2 × 10⁻¹⁷ at peak, and it turns on logarithmically, and then it empties out. Meanwhile, in the reverse bias direction, there is a little bit of charge accumulation, but not a whole lot, but it's basically empty. It stays roughly on the empty level. Okay? So the two forward and reverse bias directions indeed have very different charge profiles, which result in very different IV profiles. But remember this function I had written down here, this current is proportional to gamma right times n? Right? So if that is really true, then the curve for the current and the curve for the charge should look the same. By some scaling constant, right? I is equal n by some scaling constant. Well, it turns out that scaling constant is voltage dependent. Right? We know our barrier on the right is energy dependent. That gamma is not an energy independent gamma. That means if you have toy models that assume some constant gamma that's energy dependent, like in many publications you see, note to self, be careful. Okay? It might work on a very narrow energy range. It does not work over a broad device that you apply a couple of volts to, or even in this case, less than 1 volt. Okay? So it's really this I equals gamma n is not trivially valid, and it's an energy dependent function. So here are the key messages. An asymmetric RTD with different emitter and collector barriers shows dramatically different current voltage characteristics and forward and reverse bias. The different behavior in forward and reverse bias direction is due to charge accumulation and depletion in the RTD and in the two bias directions. Valley current is increased in the charge self-consistent calculation compared to the Thomas Fermi calculation in forward bias. And this hopping matrix element gamma is a strong function of energy. It's not a constant. Okay? So you need to be cautious about analytical formulas that assume that.